So good afternoon. This is the last session I have to do, the last real session besides the lock note that you have to sit through. So hopefully this will be somewhat interesting since it is just after lunch. We won't try to put too many of you to sleep. This session is about deploying Windows 7 with Config Manager 2007. So no. Oh, and I'm already off to a bad start. This is about deploying Windows 7 with Config Manager 2012. Okay, so how many of you are using Config Manager today? A large portion of you. That's kind of what I expected. So the fact that you can deploy Windows 7 with Config Manager shouldn't come as any big surprise to anybody. Everyone knows Config Manager 2007's able to do it. Config Manager 2012 better be able to do it as well. What's changed? What are the differences? So that's really what we want to focus on today. What's changed in Config Manager 2012 that affects OS deployment so that you understand when you move to Config Manager 2012 that here's what I need to do before I can deploy my first Windows 7 machine. So the rough agenda, what we want to do is go through a quick overview of Config Manager 2012. How many of you have been to a Config Manager 2012 session this week? Most of you. For those of you who haven't, we'll do a summary of what's changed in Config Manager 2012. Then talk a little bit about migration, not too much, and then let's focus on what's really changed for OS deployment. And at the end, let's look at actually kicking one off. So for those of you who went to Microsoft Management Summit, anyone in the room make it to that? I got jeers in New Zealand when I asked that question. It was in Vegas, and yeah, I'm sure you'd all like to go to Vegas. But in Vegas, they had all of the sessions around Config Manager 2012. 9 sessions talking about all the features in Config Manager 2012. I summarized all 9 of them in one slide. So that's all you need to know about Config Manager 2012, except there's a lot of explanation that goes with each one of those, so we'll have to go through those in a little bit of detail. But the interesting thing is, even though there were 9 sessions on Config Manager 2012, none of them were about OS deployment. So that kind of gives you an idea of really what's changed in Config Manager 2012 from an OS deployment perspective. Not a whole heck of a lot. So it's going to look very familiar to you. The main things that are going to happen is everything around OS deployment is going to change. That has some impact on OS deployment, but the task sequences are pretty much the same. The functionality is pretty much the same. There are some nice additions and some enhancements that have been made, and we'll look at all of those. So for those of you moving to Config Manager 2012, you're going to need to get this new world up and running. And it kind of falls into 3 rough categories. I mean, it's kind of hard to categorize 9 different sessions into 3 categories. But roughly, there are hierarchy changes that you need to worry about. They want you to go through and rethink your entire hierarchy, try to flatten it out some. You need to implement a central administrative site at the top of your hierarchy. It's a special site. It's not just a primary site that doesn't have any parents anymore. It is a special site. You must install it first because you can't add one later. It's not a big deal if you have a small environment, you can just create a single primary site. You never need to have a central admin site. But for everyone else, create the central admin site first and then create a layer of primaries underneath it. You are limited now to 1 layer of primaries underneath it. You can't have primaries reporting to primaries. But you can have a row of secondaries underneath the primary. So basically, you can now have this 3-tier hierarchy with a single central admin site, a layer of primaries, and then a layer of secondaries. Some of the reasons that you had additional site servers in the past are going away, especially when it comes to security. A lot of times, people would create servers, create primary sites, so that they would have a security boundary so that they could delegate administration to just that particular site server. a lot of the need for that has gone away because you can now define security in a role-based manner using collections to control what people can actually interact with. So that's kind of gone away. Some of the scalability concerns have gone away. So they really expect you to have many fewer sites than you had in the past. So you get those set up, and of course the sites have to talk to each other. In the past, all of that was done by using inboxes and senders, and files get dropped in inboxes, and all the magic happens behind the scenes. So everyone's probably got used to troubleshooting inbox replication issues. Well, now they've moved to SQL replication. So all the site-to-site communication is done using SQL replication. What does that mean? Well, it probably means you're all now going to get good at troubleshooting SQL replication. Not that it generally has any issues, but there are times when you wonder, well, what's going on? What's the status? How much is backed up waiting to replicate to the other sites? Fortunately, the new console that they provided can show you that at a glance to show you here's all the replication traffic that's waiting to go between sites, but they are using this replication in most cases. Now, you may see some magic happening behind the scenes where you see SQL replication going between different site servers, and then it drops a file into an inbox, and it picks it up and processes it just like it did before. So not everything is moved over to the SQL or the SQL replication model. Some things are still using those inboxes behind the scenes, but still, most of the site-to-site traffic isn't using SMB anymore. It's going through this SQL replication environment. As far as boundaries go on these sites, you can define boundaries for two different purposes. You kind of could do that before, where you could have protected DPs that had boundaries on them. Now they've really separated it at a higher level to say, I can have boundaries for client assignment, and I can also have boundaries for content. So when a client goes looking for content, it picks a DP based on content boundaries, but it joins a site based on site boundaries. That's actually fairly useful in these migration scenarios too, because you need to stand up a side-by-side Config Manager 2012 environment while you're still running Config Manager 2007. There's no upgrade that you can do on Config Manager 2007. You can't migrate your environment from the central site on down like you could in previous releases. You have to stand up a new infrastructure and migrate everything over to it. So in that case, you can define content boundaries for your new sites, not define site boundaries, and make sure that you don't have overlapping boundaries in place. The other thing that you'll notice is if you have multiple primary sites underneath the central admin site and you create collections, collections are now global. So before, you would create collections at the central site and they would stay at the central site. You create collections at the primary site. They wouldn't cross. I mean, I have to remember now. I've been using this for so long, I don't remember which way they go. But now they go every direction. So any collection that you define on any primary site is going to show up on every other primary site. So you need to get used to that as well, that all of the definitions that you create, all the packages, all of this stuff is going to end up replicating up, down, side, all directions. So it's kind of a global configuration now instead of more of the hierarchical structure that you had before. So that's kind of the hierarchy side. Now let's talk about the application side. The Config Manager software distribution model pretty much hasn't changed in years. I mean, it's been more or less unchanged since SMS 2.0, where you have a package, your package has programs, and then you create an advertisement that targets a particular package and program to a collection. That's now considered legacy, and they've created this new application model where you can define a high-level application, which is kind of a logical entity. It doesn't have any actual content or command lines or anything else associated with it. Then you can define one or more deployment types to say, here's how to install it, and here are the files that I'll install it with. Each of those deployment types can have rules defined on it to say, I want to use this deployment type when these conditions are met. So you may have four different deployment types on an app with rules that say, use this one on these machines, this one on these machines, this one on these machines. And you get a lot of flexibility then to target. So at the highest level, you have this app and you deploy the app. So a deployment is the equivalent of an advertisement. But unlike before, you don't target, you don't deploy, you don't advertise a specific config. You go up a level, you advertise out the app, and then Config Manager figures out which of those deployment types should be installed on each of the machines. You can also define dependencies. You can define supersedence. You can define this complex application structure and let Config Manager figure out, when I want to install this app, what else do I need to do? And it'll take care of all of that. That's even true inside of a task sequence. One of the challenges that you ran into with Config Manager 2007 is you could set up program dependency chains between different packages and programs, and it worked great with software dist, but you put it into a task sequence and it ignored all of them. Now with the new app model, it will always respect those regardless of how you're installing the apps. So that's good. Now, you can take all of your existing packages and programs, migrate them using the provided migration tools into CM12 and use them just like you did before, targeting them to machines via collections, still with your packages and programs. But they really want you to take those and convert them from package and program into new app model applications. You don't have to do that all at once. You can do that one app at a time. But to get a lot of the benefits of the new application model, you need to go through that conversion process. They really want to get the app model to kind of become your application lifecycle tool, that you're using it to keep track of what apps are still current in my environment, which ones have been superseded, how am I going to deal with different versions. All of that can be represented in this app model. The biggest change, the biggest leap that they would like you to take beyond that is don't target computers, target users. So doing all of your software distribution targeting user accounts or groups instead of targeting collections of machines. You still can do computer targeting if you want, but a lot of the features that they're providing around Config Manager 2012 and the new app model and user device affinity and software catalog and all this other stuff are user focused. So it's something that you'll really have to think about is, how do I want to do software in the CM12 world? Do I want to target, just like I always did, by building up collections and targeting machines? Or do I want to go all the way over to the new CM12 way of thinking and do everything user-based? Now, you probably think user-based, well, that sounds bad, because if I have a machine that's mine and I only use that machine, well, no problem, the software gets installed in there. But let's say I have three machines, or I log on to someone's laptop that I borrow for the day. I really don't want all of the software to be installed on every machine that I ever touch. Fortunately, though, you can put rules on the deployment types that could say something like, only install this if this is my primary machine. So you can go back to user device affinity, say that this is my machine, and as a result, do targeting based on the fact that that's what's in place. We'll talk a little bit more about that as we go through and see how that affects the task sequences in the OS deployment process as well. So they do then have this software catalog. It's a web-based catalog where a user can go in and request a particular application. You can tie approvals to that. So you can check a box and say you must get approval from the SMS administrator before they will actually be able to install the app. There's not really any workflow or anything else behind the scenes tied to those approvals, but you could create your own. It's all exposed through the SDK. So we'll take a look at that as we go through. So that's kind of the app model. Now let's talk about the infrastructure side. First, on distribution points, there can be, in the past with Config Manager 2007, there were really two different types. You had normal DPs, which were server shares or server DPs, and then you also had branch DPs. Branch DPs are gone with Config Manager 2012. They just got added with Config Manager 2007, but they're already gone. they've been replaced by providing the ability to turn any machine into a distribution point role server. Now, when I say server, that doesn't have to be a physical server. It can be a workstation OS as well. So you can't make any Windows 7, any Windows Vista SP2 or higher machine a distribution point. One of the other benefits that I see is that WebDAV's also no longer used. Not sure how many of you have ever cursed at WebDAV trying to get it configured properly. Oh, I hate that thing. It's not used anymore. Okay, well, if it's not used anymore, what takes its place? There is this concept of a single instance store. So every package that you create, every application that you create has deployment types that have content. That content is single instanced and put into one big directory structure on your site server, or multiple since it can split it across drives. But then when the client wants some content, it talks to the distribution point and asks for the package content, and it effectively reconstitutes that and provides it back to the client one file at a time via HTTP. So content doesn't use WebDAV anymore, and for the most part, those SMS, PKG, EC$, E$, all those shares go away as well. Everything's through those, through that standard central content library. You can choose on an individual package or individual deployment type basis to still make the content available through those package shares, but that's not the default. The default would be to only use the single instance store for the content and only provide it via HTTP, not via SMB. Site servers are now 64-bit only. So if you're running your current Config Manager environment on a 32-bit OS, you're not going to be running your new Config Manager 2012 on the same OS, even if you uninstalled and reinstalled. You need a 64-bit OS. That's a requirement. The beta at this point requires SQL Server 2008, but by the time CM12 releases, 2008 R2 will be supported as well. They will have a specific cumulative update that you need to install, because they have a lot of SQL replication fixes that are prerequisites for Config Manager 2012. The only exception to that 64-bit rule would be distribution points. They can be on 32-bit OSs. There is a brand new console. It's been rewritten from ground up. It's not MMC-based anymore. Very nice, ribbonized. We'll take a look at that. You also have some benefits, some additional capabilities around software update, auto-approvements, or auto-deployments, DCM set capabilities, just a variety of additional features added in. For those of you who have complained that remote control doesn't support Control-Alt-Delete, you could only control a machine where there's someone logged in, that goes away as well. So now you can remote control, log into the machine, do what you want there too. So there have been some nice changes along those lines. For those of you that have extended inventory by customizing the smsdef.moff or configuration.moff files, those files go away. All right, if those files go away, what do you replace them with? Because you still want to be able to extend the inventory. Fairly easy, they provide a GUI. The GUI shows you all the classes that are available, all the properties on those classes. You can just check off the ones that you want, and it'll inventory them. Now, if you wanted to extend that, if there's an existing MOF out there that says, here's what I want to gather, you can import that MOF into the GUI and then check the items graphically. So they've got a fairly nice story around that. So that's every new feature in CM12 summarized in one slide and discussed for about 15 minutes. To summarize it, basically, you need to plan appropriately to implement this new hierarchy. It is going to affect your hierarchy design. You do need to rethink the way you do software distribution and how you define your apps. You then need to deploy it, create the CAS, it's an important first step, then create one or more primaries, get everything working. Then you can go through the migration process of pulling all of your clients, all your packages, all your collections, any other type of object you want, using the wizards and the tools that are provided with CM12. Maybe you want to reuse your existing hardware, so they'll also provide a P2V tool, so you can take your existing CMO7 server and turn it into a virtual machine and run it on the same box, or maybe move it to your data center, a virtual machine, cloud, or something like that. Not sure how many people will actually do that, because going through a P2V process on something that generally has a huge amount of disk space attached to it is not a fun process to go through, but it might save you the expense of having doubled the hardware while you're going through this migration. So you go through that whole process, and in the end, all right, now we're ready to deploy an operating system. It's kind of like it was before. The only thing that we would say as a prerequisite to doing OS deployment with Config Manager is to make sure the environment works. Because if it's not really working, if it can't do software dist, if clients aren't healthy, then OS deployment's not going to be healthy either. So same thing with CM12. You go through, you get everything set up and working, and now it's easy to incrementally add OS deployment on top of that. So what does it take to incrementally configure a Config Manager environment for OS deployment? Well, you probably want a couple of additional roles added. You need a server locator point with Config Manager 2012 Beta 2. Interestingly enough, that role disappears after Config Manager 2012 Beta 2, with the management point taking over that functionality. So you won't have to do that in the future. You want a fallback status point just in case your clients can't get to the management point so that they can say, hey, there's something wrong. And you need a state migration point if you're going to be doing user state migration for computer replacements. If you're refreshing machines in place, you can keep the user state locally. And in that case, you don't need the SMP. But if you're doing replacements, then create the SMP and specify a place with lots of storage to put that user state. You do need a network access account. That's my first challenge when working with CM12, is where to go in the new console, as they've rearranged everything. And once you get used to it, it starts to get to be a bit intuitive, but getting to that point, you just have to break away from the structure that you had memorized before and realize that, oh, they've put some thought into this and they've regrouped things. And you always hope that they take it a little bit further and try to merge some of these things together to simplify it even more. But hey, it's a good start. It does make it easier overall, but find that account, make sure you set it, because OSD requires it to access content from Windows PE. Now for Pixie and Multicast, if you're using either of those, in the case of Pixie, with Config Manager 2007, you would enable a site role, a Pixie service point. For Multicast, that was a checkbox on the distribution point properties. With CM12, they're both checkboxes on the distribution point properties, so the Pixie service point role has gone away. It's kind of nice, at least they're consistent now. The other benefit is there's a lot more scalability. There was a limit of the number of Pixie service points that a single primary could hold in CM07, and it wasn't very big. It was somewhere like 10. Beyond 10, what was it? 75? Yeah, I don't know that they would go that far, but okay, I'll take your word for it. But with CM12, you can have as many distribution points as you want within reason, because they only test up to a certain number. In the hundreds, you can enable this as a property on each one of those distribution points. Now, odds are you don't need to do it on every single one of your distribution points. You only need to do it on the distribution points, on at least one distribution point servicing each network segment, unless you have your routers configured to forward Pixie requests and all that good stuff. So you get a lot more flexibility now. You can put as many Pixie service points out, or sorry, Pixie DPs out there as you want. You don't have to worry about there being too many anymore, which is good, because now you're flattening your hierarchy anyway. You have fewer primaries. As a result, they have more DPs, etc. The only restriction on the Pixie support is obviously it still requires WDS underneath to do Pixie and multicast, so you can't enable either of those when you have a distribution point running on a client OS. Not a big deal, fairly obvious there. So let's take a look at it. Now that we've talked about all the different changes, Let's do a quick tour. This is the new console. We can see my hierarchy here isn't particularly complicated. I have a central admin site with a single primary underneath it. All of my administration is done through the administration node. I can see my sites, and I can get to the settings from that site, including configuring site components for, say, software distribution and setting the network access account. Seems really intuitive after you get used to it, but man, it took me a long time to find that the first time. We can define client settings at a collection level, basically. So there is a set of default client agents settings here, but we can define as many of these as we want and then assign each one of those to a particular collection. The assignment of roles is pretty much as it was before. You can right-click on a particular site server and say that you want to add site system roles. The one thing that you will notice is the central admin site has a shorter list. So the central admin site can't be a management point. Clients always had to talk to a primary. They had to talk to a primary site in order to get policy. Okay, so we've got various configuration options there. The other thing that will probably burn you initially is you'll go in and you'll configure site boundaries or content boundaries, either way. But if you don't put those into boundary groups and then assign those primary or those boundary groups to a site server, the boundaries won't be used. So you always had to have two levels. You always had to define the boundary objects and then put them into a group and then use the group to assign it to a particular site or content boundary. Distribution points are handled kind of the same way. You can define distribution points, you can define distribution point groups, but they now make much better use of them. So you can say when you're distributing content, distribute to this group. When you add a new DP to that group, it remembers that you distributed the content to that group and it'll automatically distribute all the missing content to that new group member. So they're trying to get rid of some of the administrative headaches that you may have had before when you would build out your complete environment. They've also set it up so that you could have a application that has multiple deployment types that gets deployed to a particular collection and tie the content distribution to that so that instead of explicitly distributing the content ahead of time to all the DPs, you could say, well, when this needs to be targeted to this computer that's in this collection, make sure it's on the DPs as appropriate. So they're trying to automate more of that so that you don't need to administer quite as much. The migration itself to move objects from Config Manager 2007 to Config Manager 2012 is built in. You can run through a wizard, just point it at your central primary site from CM07 and tell it what you want to migrate through. You can do that as many times as you want, either the complete content, delta content, subsets of the content, whatever you want to do. Very, very flexible. They've also provided the capability to share distribution points between CM07 and CM12, so you can go through a wizard and enable that as well. It helps with the migration scenarios. Now, you can't really share anything else, but at least you can share content. Okay, if we then look at assets and compliance, this is where all of the collections come in. And now collections have to be one of two types. They can either contain users or they can contain computers. They can't contain both. Probably not a big deal. Most of you probably don't put them together today, but now it's forced. Let's just jump then into the software library, where we can define either our legacy style packages, which OSD still makes fairly good use of, so don't be surprised to see some of them in there for OSD. You also have applications that are available for users to request in some cases or for installation if you want. In this case, I can see that each of these apps has one deployment type. basically a typical standard install. They could have a second one for an App V install. They could have a third one for a TS remote app or something along those lines. So having multiple deployment types wouldn't be unusual. And then the deployment basically just says target this to a particular group of machines. And we can look at the details down below. So I can see that I have one deployment type, doesn't have any dependencies, it is an MSI, it's not superseded, etc. And then I can see the deployments themselves. So I've targeted all users and made it available. So from a terminology perspective, they're kind of going to that group policy type terminology of available or assigned, I believe is the other term, instead of specifying that it's mandatory or optional. So you do need to get used to those settings. So that's there. There are also settings in here. So if I go into the properties of this, if you're doing OS deployment, these menus get kind of long sometimes. Get me to properties. If you look at the deployment types, it's on the main properties here. Allow this application to be installed from the install application task sequence action instead of deploying it manually. So anything that you're going to try to install dynamically through the task sequence, it's kind of like it was with CM07 before. You had to check the box to say that's allowed for each of these. On the deployment types, here's where I've actually specified my command lines and content, so I can point to a particular UNC path. It's one of the big things for migration. If you don't have UNC paths as your package sources, you'll have a hard time sharing content or migrating it between CM07 and CM12, so make sure you use UNCs. I think that's about it for there. So you can specify then the installation command line. So it's an MSI, no big surprise, I want to install it quietly. You can also specify an uninstall command. So if the app is targeted to a particular user or to a computer, and then that user or computer falls out of the scope or falls out of the collection that it targeted, it can automatically remove that. You then also can specify the product code for repair. But what's more important is you can specify these detection rules. So the detection rule is evaluated on the client to figure out, is this there or not? So if you have an app that you've assigned to a particular machine, it'll be able to detect that it's there, and it won't reinstall it if it sees that it's already present. That's good. So maybe you had the task sequence install it, and then later on it came through and said, oh, it's already there. I don't need to install it a second time. On the flip side, if it sees that it's been removed and it's supposed to be there, it'll put it back. So if you've got a user who goes into add remove programs and uninstalls a particular app, Config Manager will eventually notice that and put the software back on the machine. Okay, so we've got that. If they went through the software catalog and made any requests, you could see the approval requests here and you could right click and approve them. Software updates, operating systems, all the standard stuff that you saw before. Let's focus a little bit in on drivers and look at one of the changes that they made here. You can say import drivers like you did before, and there's this new drop-down. So you can say what to do for duplicate drivers. Do I want to import it and append the new category to the existing categories? Seems like a reasonable default. Or you could say import it and keep the existing categories, or import it and overwrite the existing categories, or what happens today with Config Manager 2007 SP2 with no hotfixes? It doesn't import it at all. It just generates an error saying that it's already there. There was one hotfix that came out for Config Manager 2007 that caused it to switch to the second option, import and overwrite the existing categories. Well, then there were some large customers who didn't like that behavior and raised another bug, so they released another hotfix that changed it to import the driver and keep the existing categories. So not a big surprise, now you look at it and see you have all these options. Basically, it's the default behavior from CM07 plus the two different hotfix behaviors and the top one, which is what I had requested them to do a long time ago. So they finally added that in as well. So a lot of the challenges that you had with building up driver packages or building up driver categories before have disappeared just from a nice simple drop down here that lets you choose what to do for duplicates. Otherwise, we still have the same stuff. We still have drivers and driver packages. We still have operating system images, which are OS image packages. You have operating system installers, which are OS install packages, and then boot images and task sequences as well. And everything related to reporting and status message queries and everything else falls under monitoring. And this is the database replication side, so you'll look at this one periodically to see, well, what's the status of the link and what's going on between it. You can see all the details there and troubleshoot from there. Where it really gets interesting is some of the built-in mechanisms for looking at content distribution status and distribution point group maintenance status. So maybe you add a new DP to the group and you want to see, has all the content made it to it yet? All these options are very easily available through through the console here. So let's then switch for a minute over to a client machine and show one last piece. So I have a client machine here that is a Config Manager 2012 client. It got a notification here saying that new software is available. If I double click on that, I can open the Software Center. That will pop up here in a second. And that will show all of the software that's been assigned to me or assigned to this computer, and I can execute it from there. So this is the replacement for Run Advertise Programs. And looks kind of nice. It can show me, in this case, all of my OS deployment task sequences I've advertised out to all systems. Obviously, they're not mandatory. They're not assigned. They're optional. They're available to the machines to execute. They're not going to just kick off. One of the things that you might have run into before with CM07 when targeting advertisements like that, when targeting task sequences, is you may have needed to create two different ones, one for say all systems and one for all unknown computers, because all unknown computers weren't members of all systems. With CM12, all unknown computers are members of all systems, so you don't need to do that anymore. All systems really means all systems now. So you can also see any software that was installed by Config Manager. In this case, I haven't installed any, and you can see some various configuration options that clients may be able to adjust on the machines if you so allow them. The other interesting thing then here is if you click on this link that says find additional applications from the application catalog, it will launch the web page, this Config Manager app catalog, software catalog, whatever they're going to be calling it in the release candidate when that finally is available. And it will show you the software that admins have made available to you as a member of a particular collection or to everyone because they've made it available to all users. In this case, I've made a couple of apps available to all users. I can see what those are, and I can just select one of them and say, install. Are you sure that you want to install the app? Yeah, sure, why not? And it'll then take off. Now, before with CM07, if you were to get dropped into a collection to have a particular app targeted to your machine, you would have to wait quite a while before that would actually kick off and install, because you'd have to wait for the collection to be evaluated, you'd have to wait for the policy to be processed, you'd have to wait for the client to download it, you'd have to wait for the policy to be evaluated on the client, and then finally it would kick off. You can see here, it's already downloading and installing, so they've put in enough optimizations into this process that by going to the catalog and requesting a piece of software, it happens immediately. No delay at all before this soft this software is actually installing. And if I click on it, I can actually see that it's presently downloading 68%. And as soon as it's finished downloading, it'll kick off the installation and bam, it's there. So very fast process to go through. And to make that work, they've done some magic behind the scenes to have the software catalog website talking to the client interactively to say, hey, wake up. You're about to get a new policy, and I'm going to hand it to you. So they hand it off to the client machine. The client can immediately process it and say, yes, I know this was kind of generated by proxy through the website, but I know I'll get the real policy later, so I'm willing to accept that until the real policy comes along later. So the installation is complete, the software is installed successfully, and great, I've got Angry Birds on my machine. Blazingly fast. It makes you think about, well, maybe I can do user-targeted software. Maybe I don't need to have my OS deployment task sequence install the packages so that the machine's immediately usable. If people can go out and actually get software this quickly on their machines, then it makes you think about the different options that may be available. The other thing worth pointing out here, if I had any approval requests, I could see them there. But on the My Devices tab, there's a checkbox here that says, I regularly use this computer to do my work. That is the flag that says, this is my machine. I am the primary user of this box. In this case, I didn't preset it because I didn't configure my task sequence with the user ID that I wanted to set it to. But I have enabled on my site the ability for a user to tag it themselves. So in this case, I go out to the web page, I can check the box, and as soon as I do that, now this is my primary user, and those software targeting rules that say only install on a machine where I'm the primary user can kick in and install any software that is targeting me. Very nice, very easy. There's no restriction on the number of primary users on the machine. You can have multiple. You can configure them on the server side. You can set up the server to approve them if you want, to have the admin go in and say, yes, the user specified that they're the primary user, and yes, I approve. They really are the primary user. So you can do things like that. Okay, so that's CM12. As a quick overview. Now let's talk more about OS deployment. So I said there weren't any big features, but there are some nice little features out there that we can take advantage of. First of all, they've improved the boot image that you would generate. So if you generated an ISO and used that ISO to deploy machines, or if you copied it to a USB key and used it that way. One of the restrictions that you had in CM07 is that it would be tied to the particular primary site that you used to generate it. So if you had multiple primary sites in your environment, you had two choices. You could either only generate your media from your central site, because a central site could support global roaming to all the child primaries, or you would generate different media for each primary and then only use that media within the boundaries of the one that you wanted it to belong to. If you did the central site approach, the downside was your client would end up getting assigned to the central site. It would become a client of the central site. And then at the end of the task sequence, you'd have to push it back to the primary site that you wanted it to be on. If you did the multiple primary site media, well, now you've just got multiple sets of media to worry about. So, okay, they recognize that's a problem, so they've now provided the ability to create hierarchy-wide boot media. When you go in and say you want to create bootable media, you get a checkbox to say, I want this to be site-wide, and I can then specify one or more management points that the client should talk to in order to figure out where they really belong. So at that point, it respects boundaries. They've also provided a checkbox to say, I want to do an unattended OS installation. One of the challenges you had with ISOs before is they would always boot into the wizard. And even though you just had to click next through the wizard twice before the mandatory advertisement would take off, you had to click through the wizard twice. So now they provided a checkbox to say, I want to skip the wizard because I don't have a password. I don't want to specify static IP information. I just want it to go. The downside is if you check the box and there is no mandatory advertisement to the computer, it'll immediately reboot. So guess what the default is in Config Manager 2012 Beta 2? Checked. So everyone goes through and they generate their first ISO and they try it out and they see it boot up and immediately reboot again because they didn't have any mandatory advertisements. They only had optional ones. They changed that default for RC, so now the default will be to have it unchecked, which is nice. They've also added the ability to put in pre-start command hooks, a little more flexible than what you had to do before in CM07. In CM07, you had to create a tsconfig.ini that contained the command lines that you wanted. You needed to inject the files into the boot image yourself, and then when the boot image came up, it would see the tsconfig.ini, run the command that you specified, and everything was fine. But if you wanted to change anything in there, you manually had to go back into the boot image, mount it, make your changes, commit the changes, and then go back into the Config Manager console and say update DPs. At that point, it would mount it again, it would put its own files into it, and then push it out to all the DPs. So it was kind of a painful process to go through. Now they've separated that some. So you can specify, I have a command. So in effect, it builds the tsconfig.ini for you, and I have content. So put this content into the boot image anytime you update the distribution points. It'll mount, it'll compare, it'll see what's missing, it'll add it in, commit the changes, and push it off. So it turns it into a very easy process to make updates to this. So Johan's point is, if you do unsupported stuff, you can get unsupported things to work. So yeah, sure, there are workarounds. Even for the unattended install, you could hack it around to do an unattended install. So really, they're just coming back around and saying, now we can provide a supportable option for doing these types of things. Okay. On the task sequence side, we already talked a little bit about user device affinity, but they've provided some task sequence variables that if you set them to the username that you want to become the primary user on the device, they'll take care of making that happen. The thing that you need to watch for, though, is when you create your bootable media or when you create your boot images, or it might be the deployments, I'd have to look at that again, you specify the approval mode for user device affinity. If you set it to auto-approve, then anything set through the task sequence becomes so. If you set it to manually approve, then you as an administrator would have to go back to the console and say, yes, this is the primary user. Or you could basically just say it can't be set, and then the task sequence wouldn't be able to set it. But in most cases, you've created the task sequence, you've done the automation, you want to allow it to automatically take effect. Pretty easy to do, just set the variables appropriately. They've also provided some additional options for user state migration, so you can go into the capture user state step and say, I want to do hard links just by checking a box, or you can check a box to say, I want to do offline migration. So before, you had to do scripts or use MDT to do things like that. Now that's built in. They've also provided the ability to do offline servicing for OS images. Not OS install packages, but OS image packages. You can take an existing WIM, you can take your existing software updates that are in your Config Manager environment that you've downloaded from Microsoft Update using your SUP, and you can run a wizard that says, take this list of updates and this WIM, and when you have time, go and inject these for me. So you basically can specify a date and time that that should happen, and it'll go off and it will do that in the background on the site server, by taking the existing WIM, making a copy of it, mounting it, trying to inject the updates offline, which only works for Windows 7, Windows Vista, and the server equivalents for certain types of updates, the typical CBS cab file, MSU file type updates. It'll inject those offline. It will keep track of the fact that these are the ones that I've installed. And when it's done, it will copy the WIM back to the package source folder. So it just makes it easy to keep your images up to date. You don't need to go through the whole image creation process. You don't need to manually mount it and inject them yourself. It'll go through and automate that for you. So that's kind of nice. You can go through that process, and it will greatly simplify things. We already looked at the driver import improvements, so it just makes it easier to deal with duplicates, especially if you're not using the unsupported Johann approach to maintain your driver catalog. If you wanted to create driver packages that contained a particular set of drivers or driver categories that contained a particular set of drivers, it makes it doable now. You can add more Pixie distribution points. We already talked about that. One of the other kind of side effects is that with Config Manager 2012, they've now provided a 64-bit client to run on a 64-bit OS. With CMO7, they had an x86 client. So anytime you ran a task sequence on a 64-bit OS, you were running in an x86 task sequence engine. As a result, you needed to worry about things like disabling file system redirection and accessing the 32-bit registry versus the 64-bit registry and getting 64-bit executables out of sysnative instead of out of system32. So you had all of these little gotchas that you had to take into account for 64-bit OSs. Now, they've moved to a 64-bit client with a 64-bit task sequence engine, and as a result, you're going to need to undo all of those little tweaks, because they're not necessary anymore, and in fact, they're going to break things in plenty of cases. Sysnative, if you came to my session at the beginning of the week, is only valid in an x86 process on an x64 OS. Well, you're no longer in an x86 process on an x64 OS, so you now need to go back to system32. So there will be little tweaks, so definitely go through and test everything on a 64-bit OS with a CM12 client to make sure that you haven't scripted anything that is specifically designed to handle x86 on x64. It's not too bad overall, but there will be some tweaks that need to be made. Pre-staged media was actually supposed to be a Config Manager 2012 feature. They had that done in advance, so they actually pulled that forward into Config Manager 2007 R3. So you've already seen it. It's still there in CM12, not a big surprise, although it does now support the new CM12 features, including the new app model, so installing applications, and the new boot image capabilities that are there as well. It's particularly useful for the site-wide boot media. You can have a single boot image that works across all the sites. We've already talked some about the boot image improvements. We can have hierarchy-wide. We can do an unattended OS installation. And they have the new pre-start execution hooks. But some of the other things that you can then do as a result is you can hook a script in that sets a task sequence variable that says, I know I don't have any mandatory advertisements for task sequences to this computer, but I have 4 optional ones. I want to pick one of those 4. So I can run a script that says the task sequence ID that I want to execute is this one. So you can automate that process rather than having to go through the menu and choose one of the 4 non-mandatory advertisements to execute. So you do get some flexibility around those lines. We've already looked at that some. We'll look at that in a little bit more detail as we go through. So let's keep talking here for a minute. We've already talked in detail about pre-configure user device affinity. I kind of got ahead of myself some. Support for the new application model. You can have an install application step where you specify 1 app that you want to install, 10 apps that you want to install, or like you could do before, you could specify a dynamically built list of applications and it would take care of installing those. It would follow all the dependencies and prerequisites, so it will do those installations as well. And we already talked about USMT. So now let's skip over to the server and take a look at some of this stuff. Okay. So in our software library, we have task sequences. If we edit those task sequences, in this case, it's a task sequence created with MDT 2012. We can see the capture user state step, which now has the additional options that I talked about. So to enable hard links, we can just check the box. To do an offline capture, we can just check the box. Or if we wanted to do a VSS capture, if you were doing a local capture with a physical store instead of hard links. You could enable that as well. There is the new install application step where you can specify either statically, I want to install these applications, and then specify one or more of them. Unfortunately, you can't do multi-select. So I can build a list there of apps that should be installed, or I can say that it should be done according to a dynamic variable list. With the install packages, install software step in Config Manager 2007, you would specify a base variable name, and then it would be suffixed with three digits from 1 through 999, and it would install the apps in the order that you specified. In CM12, you can now specify a two-digit suffix instead of three, which now means you're limited to between 1 and 99 dynamic packages to install per install application step. Now, because of the dependencies and other things that might happen behind the scenes, those 99 packages in this list might blow up into hundreds of packages that need to be installed, hundreds of apps that need to be installed. So it's probably not a big deal overall. Plus, you can create as many of these steps as you want. You would just need different sets of base variables. There's a question over here.
The list of applications that you have up there, does it finish installing one application before it gets to the next one?
Yes, most definitely. So the question was, will it finish installing one before it moves on to the next one in the list? Yeah, it's never going to install anything in parallel because that doesn't work so well. Especially with MSIs, you can only install one MSI at a time. That tends to be one of the big problems with people installing software as part of task sequences. If you don't get the command lines right to say, run this and wait for it to finish, the task sequence happily kicks off the process and then moves on to the next step. If the next step is install something else, now they're going to stomp on each other. So it tends to cause task sequence failures if you don't get that right. When you're doing normal software distribution without these chained immediately one after the other processes, your odds of being affected by something like that are very low until you start getting into this new app model with dependencies, which effectively make things install sequentially like that as well. So you will notice that occasionally where, like, if you get the command line options for an app wrong, if you see that the program finishes in 2 seconds, and it's a 200 meg piece of software, you know it didn't really install 200 meg in 2 seconds. What it did is it started the initial process, that finished, but then another process took over and did the rest of the work. That's bad. You want it to wait until everything's done. So we've got the install application step here. That's really about the biggest changes in the task sequence itself. Not a big change. The task sequence editor itself hasn't really changed at all. Apart from the steps that we talked about, there aren't really any changes there. The other changes that you would see would be on the media side. So if we right-click and say we want to create task sequence media, we can specify options. So typically you'd want bootable media. Here's the checkbox for allowing unattended operating system deployment. If that's checked, you better have an assigned deployment, or if you prefer old technology terminology, and a mandatory advertisement. I don't have that, so I'll leave that unchecked. If I specify dynamic media, I then will need to specify a management point that can redirect a client to a different management point based on its location. Now think about that for a little bit. You have a central administration site that doesn't have an MP. You have multiple primaries. With CM07, those primaries wouldn't know about each other. This primary would have no possible way of redirecting a client to the primary sitting right next to it. Clients could figure that out itself by reading the Active Directory information, but MP referrals weren't a possibility. But now with this replication model where all this metadata gets replicated to every site, all the MPs know about each other. All of the site servers know about each other. You can have multiple MPs. They will load balance themselves because the clients can easily pick one. All the content is going to be replicated through SQL and be available at all the sites, which is why this works. Now, you still may want to specify multiple MPs in the list just for redundancy purposes in case one of them is not available, or for load purposes if you're doing a lot of these to distribute the load, but you don't have to because one MP can always give the right answer. So I had to specify an ISO name. I really don't want a password. Here's the setting for user device affinity. I had to specify what to allow, so do not allow it at all, allow it pending administrator approval, or allow it with auto approval. Config Manager by default generally picks the most secure option, so it would always say do not allow, but generally I always change it to the least restrictive because I'm doing demos, so you have to figure out what's most appropriate for you and choose that option. Then you can choose a particular boot image to use as the base for that, a distribution point to get it from, which hopefully is close by, and then you can specify one or more management points. In this case, I only have one, so it's fairly easy to select. Now, the nice thing is, in the release candidate version of Config Manager 2012, it forces you to specify one. In Config Manager 2012 Beta 2, it doesn't. So if you're used to just clicking next, 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 next through wizards, you end up with boot media that doesn't do anything. It boots up, says, oh, I'm dynamic media, I need to talk to an MP, I don't have an MP, reboot. So it lets you shoot yourself in the foot. Fortunately, with the RC, they fixed that, so you had to put one in here. Here's where we can put in. Any release dates on the RC, not for public disclosure. I mean, they're basic guidelines for, you're not going to get me to say that in public. They're basic guidelines for Config Manager 2012 is that it will release in the second half of the year 2011, calendar year, not Microsoft years. So guess what? We're already in the second half of the calendar year 2011, so they haven't gotten any more specific on the release dates for that. But think about it. We're in September. September, October, November, December. It's going to be somewhere in that range. How long are they going to allow the release candidate to bake before they actually RTM? Generally, it's a couple of months. So we're in the month, a few month window, and there's going to be a release in the middle, and then there needs to be a couple of months after that. Do the math, you can probably figure it out. So when we're creating this, we can actually put pre-start commands into the media as well, same as we could do with the boot media on the DP, or on the boot images on the DPs, specifying a pre-start command and any additional files that we want to include. One little oddity here, though, is if you look at the properties on a boot image. You have a checkbox to specify a command, and you have another checkbox for specifying a folder via UNC path that should be injected. Here, you had to choose a package and a distribution point to pull that package from. So it's not consistent between the two. You end up having two different sources that you need to make use of, which not quite sure why they've done that, but it's fairly easy to get used to that. Because I've checked it, it's required, I don't really want it. And then you get the summary, and at this point it would create the ISO. I've already got an ISO, so I don't need to do that. Okay, so we've looked at task sequences. We can look at the boot image properties. And there's not really a whole lot that's changed here. One thing that is worth mentioning is with Config Manager 2007, when you needed to push out boot images to the Pixie service points, you needed to target each of the boot images to that special SMS Pixie images server share DP. So boot images needed to always be distributed to twice as many DPs as the normal packages did. With the new Config Manager, there's just a checkbox, which I have to remember exactly where that's at, probably under distribution settings. Nope. Content locations. All right, take my word for it. There is a checkbox somewhere that basically you just say check this box and it will push it out to all of the Pixie DPs automatically. So you really don't need to worry about it anymore as far as getting it out to the right DPs. It is in there, but I'm not going to click through every one of those tabs looking for it. All right. Let's go back to the slides for a minute. We've debated this a little bit already, kind of in discussion as we've gone through, but you have a choice to make. If today you're doing OS deployment using a task sequence, where that task sequence installs all the software that's needed on that machine through whatever means you've come up with, maybe you're using MDT in a database, maybe you're using collection variables, doesn't matter, but the end result is the task sequence does all the work, they want you to stop. They want you to shift over to using user device affinity with a primary user on the machine, with user targeting, to make all of this software automatically install based on who you are. So now if you deploy a new operating system and you're tagged again as the primary user, which the task sequence can take care of, all that software will automatically reinstall without any additional work that needs to be done. So you had to figure out, is that something you really want to do? You had to make that choice. You're either going to have the task sequence take care of it and do computer-based targeting, or you could have the user targeting and user device affinity take care of it. Obviously, the Config Manager team is going to try to suggest that you use the capabilities in the product and task sequences. Just worry about them for getting the OS down on the box. Everything else, the new app model can take care of. So think about that for a while. People have also put together task sequences that don't install operating systems. So you can create a task sequence that just runs a series of commands. It's really all a task sequence is a series of commands that you want to run. It can have multiple reboots in it. It keeps track of where it left off. It can pick up with the next step all the way through. So if you have particularly complex apps, people will go through and create a task sequence to install that app. Works great. They would prefer you don't do that anymore either. It'll still be supported. You'll still be able to do it, but they'll say, well, you can build up these application trees where you define the app that you want to install. You can create all these dependent apps. You can define all the rules and the dependencies, and all of that can be automated using the new app model, so that you don't need to use task sequences for anything other than OS installation anymore. Maybe at some point they'll remove support for that altogether, but at this point at least it's a strong suggestion. It's not a mandatory thing that you must do. Now we talked a little bit about the offline servicing. Let's see if I've missed anything on here. Basically it only works for Vista and above, and only the latest supported service packs for those. It only works for OS updates. It doesn't work for Office or any IE type updates that aren't. Well, it works for some IE updates because they're OS updates, but basically it works for any component-based servicing updates only. It is a fairly safe process, but let's just take a look at it and show what it looks like. So on my site server, I have a whole lot of software updates, but I've downloaded a set of them into a deployment package. I've pushed that out to the DPs, and they'll be installed on the machine when it gets deployed, but I want to do it sooner than that. I want to have them injected into the image. So I can go to Operating System Images, find my custom image here, and say schedule updates. At that point, it will give me a list of all the obviously applicable updates that are available in any deployment package in my particular hierarchy. In this case, it knows that my image is Windows 7 x86, so it's only going to show me things that are Windows 7 x86. But it doesn't really know what's in my image unless it put it there itself. So it knows I've already been through this a few times, so there are like 5 or 6 updates in that image. But it doesn't really know if these are truly applicable or not. So while I can tell it to install them, that doesn't mean they'll actually install. It's not a fatal issue. If you check an update that's not applicable, it'll try to install it, log a message saying I couldn't install it, and just go ahead and do the other ones. One in the list here that obviously won't inject offline is a service pack. You can't inject service packs offline. It's not supported, and it'll fail miserably. But the others, yeah, generally should work fine, that I can just specify a subset of updates that I want to inject. I can say when to do it, either as soon as possible or at a particular date and time in the future. And that's it. When I click Next, that will kick off a thread running on the server that goes through that whole process. Copy the Wim, mount it, inject the updates using DISM, commit the changes, take the resulting Wim, copy it back to the package source directory, and we're done. The server's done. You're not done, because then you would need to go in and confirm that all the updates were installed the way you expected. So you can see the end result. It'll show you whether it was successful or not. And you need to push out the updated Wim to all your DPs. It would be bad if it just decided to do that as soon as the process was updated, because it may not pick the best time to do that, so it makes you do that manually. Very easy to do, fairly straightforward. And if we look at the properties here, we can see the updates that were actually installed. So if you're in that monthly cycle of rebuilding images because there are new updates, this might short-circuit that, where you could say, I'm only going to rebuild the image when I have app updates to put in. I can do OS updates through this process just to automate the whole thing. So that's a nice feature. So what about MDT? Well, if you were in my previous session this morning, yeah, there'll be a new MDT to support Config Manager 2012, adding support for user device affinity and the new application model and the boot image enhancements. It will have a new version of the UDI wizard-based installation, a brand new wizard designer, a new extensible wizard framework, so you can take a look at that. We will continue to support CMO7 as well, so you can use Config Manager 2007 with MDT 2012, get all your task sequences upgraded there, and then when it comes time to migrate to Config Manager 2012, you can move those through the migration tool directly from CMO7 to CM12. No changes necessary, with one little exception. When you import that task sequence into CMO7, we delete the install application step to dynamically install new app model apps, because obviously it's not supported in CMO7. When you migrate it then to CM12, it doesn't get put back. So manually you would have to go into the task sequence and put the install application step back, but that's fairly easy. It's just a copy and paste job. So before we do Q&A, it's the typical OS deployment session. I mean, you go through and you talk about all this different stuff, and you look at admin tools, but you never deploy an OS. So, okay, we've got 3 minutes left. Let's kick off an OS deployment. Just to prove that, yeah, it all really works, and if we sat around for the next 30 minutes or so, we'd see it all complete. So I have an existing client. It has an advertisement to it through the Software Center. I can open that up and kick that off. While it's thinking about the Software Center, let me pull up a second client. Now I've made it unhappy. Come on, you can do it. Second client. This one's bare metal, so we booted into the new wizard. It doesn't really look any different than the old wizard, except there's a new button here where you can configure proxy settings. So if you're really brave, you could do OS deployment via a proxy server across the internet if you configure it appropriately and get all this other stuff working. It's a question.
Can you include those two options in those boxes in current task sequence or in a settings file? Or do you?
So the question was, let's say you check the box to say do this unattended, which skips the screen. Can you specify a script or settings to provide that via maybe task sequence variables? Not really. The static IP information, you can't, but in the MDT task sequence, we've provided a script that does the same thing. So it can be done by setting the MDT variables that actually are the same as the config manager variables, and we would take care of it. The proxy settings, I haven't actually looked to see how they do that, but my guess is it would be the same basic configuration. If you set the task sequence variable appropriately, it'll be consumed and should work. But I'd have to try that one myself to confirm it. So I can click Next and see all the optional advertisements to this machine. I can choose my existing Windows 7 x86 task sequence, and pretty much off it goes. Same thing from an existing client. I can choose an advertisement, a deployment, click it, and it knows that I already installed this one already, but hey, fine, I'll reinstall it again. So if we sat and watched, the whole process would kick off, and 30 minutes later, we'll have new operating systems on both of these machines with state migration, with any apps installed that we've specified. So all the nuts and bolts at that point work pretty much the same as they did before. And that's it. If you don't believe me that these installs will actually work, yeah, come back in a half hour or so and we can look at them. Other questions? So what would you do for tier one software like virus scanning? Would you do it via UDA or would you do it through another mechanism? The challenge is that if you have something like virus scanning software that you target to a user and say install it whenever that user logs in, well, there's no user logged in initially, so you have a window of vulnerability, and for most people that's unacceptable. So as a result, yeah, you may do computer targeting for mandatory stuff, or you could do it through the task sequence, or you could build it into your images for that matter. So you have options, but yeah, you typically wouldn't use UDA for things that you want installed on 100% of your machines. It's going to be the stuff that's more of the discretionary software that gets installed on some machines but not on others. There's a question up here. What's the default for a new collection?
No, what's the default query statement in 2012?
When you're creating a collection rule or?
Yeah, collection rule, yes. Because in 2007, if you by chance left a blank query, you'd get all systems.
I suspect it's unchanged, but you know, I haven't actually looked at that. Yeah, so if we went to here and said that we wanted to have a device collection, create one, you always have to limit it to a collection, first of all. So that's a new mandatory requirement. So if you limited it to all systems, then, well, obviously it starts off with all systems. But then you would specify a query-based rule, and I suspect the default is going to be everything because it just lets me click OK from that point. Gives you a warning, but yeah, everyone clicks through warnings without reading them, so yeah, I don't think it would really change anything. But the fact that they do require that all new collections be collection limited in the first place is probably the best safety net that you'll get. The rule builder isn't really changing, but the fact that every collection must have a limiting collection is a new requirement because that's the way the role-based security works. You must restrict every collection to another collection. If you purposely choose all systems, well then, yeah, you could still shoot yourself.
It's more so if someone comes in and modifies a query and leaves that query blank accidentally, and you've got a mandatory assignment to that collection.
Yep, the ultimate oops.
Yeah.
This question over here.
In the beginning, you talked about CAS and prime sites. I just want to clarify, we don't, in Australia, we don't necessarily always have to have a CAS because we've got small sites. So
if you can get away with one primary,
yep,
with no children,
yep,
then you don't need a CAS.
Yeah, so it was, the presentation is fantastic, but it does appear that you do say you need a CAS. I just want to clarify that I think a lot of people would go away and go and put a CAS in and
You only need a CAS if you have a hierarchy at all. Because without the CAS, you can't attach sites together. You only need a CAS if you have more than one primary. If you just have one primary, then you're fine without it. The annoying part is with Config Manager 2012 right now, you can't add a CAS later. Yeah. So if you ever think that, oh, well, initially I'm only going to have one primary site, but 3 months from now I might add a second one, create the CAS, because you won't be able to do it later without rebuilding everything.
There's no way
at this point. That's something they may consider for the future, but at this point, CAS must be first. The only option you get to attach a site to a parent is at installation time. Can't configure it later.
Is that feature that's being considered for a future?
It is being considered for a future service pack, yeah.
Thanks.
How do you build this on top of an existing WDS installation?
How do you build this on top of an existing WDS installation? Well, Config Manager normally assumes that it's going to take control of any WDS server that becomes a Pixie service point, or in this case, a checkbox on the distribution point. You can, through various means, take the boot WIMs that are used with Config Manager and import them into WDS and push them out like that. I'm sure Johan's got some unsupported blog entries that describe how to do that. So it is possible, but generally when you're using WDS and Pixie, Config Manager assumes it's in complete control of your WDS server. It also has no real awareness of the fact that there could be multiple WDS servers in your environment. That just gets to be total chaos. So you have to think about it, but generally if you're going to use WDS with Config Manager, you want to go all the way or consider questionable strategies for doing it other ways. It depends on what you're doing through WDS today. I mean, Config Manager deploys boot images via WDS for the sole purpose of running Config Manager task sequences. If you have any other boot images in WDS, you'll never be able to deploy them because Config Manager will never let it get that far. Config Manager will either actively say, please boot this machine from my boot image, or it will say, abort Pixie, I don't want to Pixie boot this at all. It doesn't have a ignore this and let it go up to the next provider type of setting. Oh. All right. If there are any other questions, come up front. We're getting down to the last few people. So thanks. Fill out your evals if you haven't done it yet. And hopefully we'll see everyone over at the Locknote.